I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detecttheSOS.com today.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
U.S. Border Patrol is in Greater New Orleans and has been for over a week now, with a goal of arresting 5,000 illegal immigrants and taking them to detention centers and eventually kicking them out of the country. And we've heard a lot of controversy surrounding these operations, but the question I had today was, how much of a difference is this going to make? With estimates of there being between 50 and 60,000 illegals in the Greater New Orleans area, will arresting 10% or less of them and deporting 10% or less of them have a real impact on illegal immigration? To help us understand what's going on, Andrew Arthur joins us. He's a resident fellow in law and policy for the Center for Immigration Studies. Good morning, Arthur. How are you, Mr. Arthur?
Dave, I'm doing great. Please call me Art. Everybody does.
All right. I'll call you Art. And you tell me, with these immigration enforcement efforts going on, we've seen them across the country now in city after city. Now they're going on here with U.S. Border Patrol in the Greater New Orleans area. How much of an impact does it have overall on illegal immigration?
It actually has a very big impact, Dave, because it changes the perspective. It changes the narrative that if you enter the United States illegally, if you make it past Border Patrol, or if you get apprehended and you're released into the United States, that you're home free, that you can basically remain here forever. That's not what the law says, and that's not what Donald Trump wants to have happen. And so consequently, when you actually enforce the laws, when you go out and you pick people up, when you have high-profile stories about apprehensions, it changes perspective in the unauthorized community in any place. I'll give you an example. I live in Charlotte, North Carolina, and we recently had an operation there. About 350 people were apprehended in what was called Operation Charlotte's Web. Now, there are 400,000 unauthorized aliens in the North Carolina area. But it really had an impact on the community, and people really began to rethink whether they should continue to live in North Carolina, whether they actually considered for the first time in 4 years, whether they should simply, bank their earnings and go back home. And, from that perspective, it's very important because, we got so used to 4 years of Joe Biden where nobody was arrested unless they were the most serious criminal. In fact, Louisiana, sued the federal government because it wasn't arresting enough criminal. It wasn't arresting the criminal aliens that it was supposed to. Now, Louisiana ended up losing that case on a technicality at the Supreme Court. But Congress, of course, fixed that technicality in the Lake and Riley Act, the first bill that they passed in the current 119th Congress. So, yeah, it makes a huge difference. Unfortunately, Dave, I think people get this idea that if somebody comes here illegally, that they're going to remain here until they're physically picked up and removed from the United States. But that's not the way that it's ever worked. We know that about a third of the Irish that came, you know, following the potato famine. We know that about a third of the Italians who came in the late 19th, early 20th century actually went back. And so what the Trump administration is doing is it's changing the incentives in the system to give more people more reason to go back. We already know that about 1.2 to 1.6 million people have voluntarily returned ever since Donald Trump came back to office.
So it's not the point that Border Patrol and ICE and other federal agencies are going to arrest every illegal immigrant, but they are sending the message that you could be arrested, detained, and deported, and that has a ripple effect on people's decision whether to enter the country illegally and whether to stay in the country illegally.
And Dave, you made a key point there, that first part about enter the country illegally. Under the Biden administration, it was worth it to pay $7,000 to a smuggler to bring you here because you could make $7,000 back in about a year, you know, even after you paid all of your expenses. And, you know, it's more than just a ripple effect. It is a vibe shift, if you will, about the cost of illegal immigration and the impacts of unlawful status in the United States. Employers are going to be, you know, double checking documents to make sure they're really good. And people will be, you know, considering whether they too want to be arrested and placed in the back of a squad car or if they want to go down to Louis Armstrong Airport, buy a ticket and simply go back home.
We're talking with Andrew Arthur, resident fellow in law and policy for the Center for Immigration Studies. If you have a question, feel free to call us or text us on the Oakland Art Jewelers Talk and Text line at 504-260-1870. As Border Patrol agents continue to make detentions and arrests here in southeast Louisiana with a goal of 5,000 illegal immigrants apprehended during this operation. We'll continue the conversation after this check on WWL Traffic. We're at or near freezing across much of the North Shore right now, with temperatures ranging from 32 to 34 and calm winds, so you may find some frost you have to eliminate from your windshield this morning before you head on out. It's currently 34 under clear skies with no wind in Slidell. Perfect conditions for frost. Not that cold south of the lake. The lake keeping us a little warmer here in the city. 47 at the airport, but with that wind out of the northeast at 6, feels like 44 degrees. I'm Dave Cohen, in for Tommy Tucker, and we're talking immigration and about the sweeps going on now in southeast Louisiana and what kind of impact they're having with the federal government trying to remove and apprehend some 5,000 illegal immigrants during this operation that they have started across southeast Louisiana. Our guest this half hour is Andrew Arthur, who is with the Policy for the Center on Immigration Studies. Tell us a little bit about the Center for Immigration Studies, Andrew. Or Art, as you asked me to call you.
Yeah, of course, Dave. We're a 501c3. We're based in Washington, D.C. We are nonpartisan, and we examine the impact of immigration on American society, on the economy. I personally have testified about 16 times now before Congress. I've spoken about it across Europe. And, you know, my colleagues have testified about 150 times. We have a website, cis.org. I generally write about once a day on whatever is a breaking immigration issue. I, you know, explain it in very simple terms because, unfortunately, Dave, immigration is one of those things that is too easily demagogued on the left, on the right, simply because it can be complicated. So, you know, our job is to, you know, explain it in simple terms, explain what the impacts are going to be, and, you know, tell you how the policy is going to affect Americans.
Do you lean left or right? Do you define yourselves as either conservative or liberal?
So we have both Republicans and Democrats on our staff. Try to do it, you know, straight down the middle. Try to just stick to the facts. So I generally don't like to write tendentious things, but I do like to write things very clearly. And, you know, we have a wide variety of people. Mark Krikorian, who is the director of the Center for Immigration Studies, is an Armenian deacon, for example. We have immigrants on our staff. We have people who speak any variety of languages. And many of your listeners may be familiar with my former colleague, Todd Bensman. Todd would often go down south of the border. He would actually get in with, the migrants as they moved up through Latin America, through the Darien Gap, for example. He's actually traversed the gap so that, you know, we could really get on the ground. And a lot of the reporting that we heard, a lot of the things that we knew, you know, where they flew in 500,000 people into the United States under the Biden administration, that was actually reporting that came directly from Todd Bensman. So, yeah, I mean, we have experts. I've spent 33 years in this. George Fishman, my colleague, spent more than 25 years as the chief counsel of the Immigration Subcommittee over at House Judiciary.
Gotcha.
So,
all right.
You know, we're people who've done this before.
So help me understand. You said that this ripple effect and this message that's being sent through this crackdown is that illegal immigrants cannot just come to the United States any longer and stay here essentially forever. So I know it's mostly anecdotal. Obviously, no one is, just like you can't count every person who enters illegally. You can't necessarily count every illegal who leaves as a result of this. But what is your sense now? Are there droves of illegal immigrants voluntarily leaving this country now because of this crackdown?
Yeah, actually, and we can quantify that because we can look at the same numbers that the Federal Reserve relies upon when it looks at unemployment rates and inflation. The Community Population Survey is a product of the Census Bureau. That's how we figure out what it is. And about 2.2 million people all told have left the United States ever since Donald Trump came back to office.
All right. And that includes those who were deported, or those are the ones who voluntarily left?
No, it includes those who were deported. So this is a huge change. We saw about 6 to 8 million people come in under Biden. We've seen about 2.2 million leave ever since January 20th.
And how many illegals are remaining in the United States as of now?
So we estimate that it's about 14.2 million and, dropping very quickly as this goes on.
Art, thanks for joining us. We appreciate you sharing the facts and figures for us here on WWL. Have a great holiday season. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year.
Same to you, Dave. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye. We're back with Robert Hogan, a professor in the Department of Political Science at LSU, to continue this conversation after the news on WWL. 6:46. Thanks for joining us. Dave Cohen in for Tommy Tucker on your Tuesday morning. Got frost across much of the North Shore, where we're down in the low 30s with low winds. 40s mostly in the city with wind chills making it feel like the low 40s. So bundle up if you're heading out this morning. Robert Hogan is the chairman of the Department of Political Science at LSU and joins us now on the live line. Good morning, Professor Hogan. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well.
Immigration has dominated much of the political conversation now since the campaign for the presidency, and now we've seen it come right here to Southeast Louisiana and across the state, really, with Border Patrol agents, some 250 of them, conducting sweeps and operations to root out and remove illegal immigrants. How is this playing politically with elected officials here in Louisiana?
Well, in Louisiana, I think that it depends on which populace you were looking at. A recent poll that came out of New Orleans residents indicated that it is not playing very well. But I suspect statewide it is probably, I haven't seen any polls statewide, but I suspect that Louisiana generally, the support is quite high and is similar to what we see for a typical Republican state in the South. I suspect support is quite high. I think that I think that the evidence of that is in how the politicians are acting. You see the governor not only embracing this movement in Louisiana of ICE, but also he's welcoming it. I think that for the governor, he views this as something that is very positive, that can help burnish his conservative credentials among the electoral constituency that he has courted for a very long time. So you see the same thing in the Attorney General. The Attorney General has been issuing statements saying that people we have state laws that prevent people getting in the way of ICE and other federal agents doing their work. These constant reminders about this. So I think they view it as a winning political issue, given the sort of constituency they're courting. And I think it's fair to say that the vast majority, I suspect, of Louisiana voters would be supportive of it.
Well, we know that President Trump campaigned very heavily on this issue, both the first time and this time that he got elected. Initially, it was the build the wall that propelled him into office. And during this most recent campaign, when he was elected, he really did promote stronger enforcement and removal of illegal immigrants. Although it seemed at the time the conversation was more about criminal illegal immigrants who had committed the worst of the atrocities, murder, rape, armed robbery, and other crimes, but it's turned now more into just anyone who's here illegally, right?
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple things here. One is you know, what do voters actually think about different immigration enforcement actions? And if you ask them, for example, the New York Times recently did a nice little description of this. If you say deporting immigrants who are here illegally and have criminal records, you see broad support for this. The percentage of people, the difference between the percentage of people who support it versus don't support it is like 77 percentage points. But then if you go down and ask, well, what about deporting immigrants who are here in the country legally? You get about the exact opposite. And you get everything in between. Deporting those who fail to show up for an immigration status hearing. Okay, there's broad support for that, but not as high as if you had asked them about, you know, getting rid of those with criminal records. So a lot of it has to do with how you ask the question. And also what that seems to suggest is that, you know, people have different perspectives on aspects of this immigration enforcement policy. And I think politicians recognize that, and that influences the rhetoric that they choose to use. And so you have a lot more emphasis on the Trump administration is saying, look, we're going after those with criminal records. That's who we're going after. Now, does that reflect reality? Sometimes it doesn't, because we know that a lot of people, you know, the recent national media has shown through its analysis that, you know, about half of the people who are swept up in these raids nationally don't have any criminal records.
Other than entering the country illegally.
Right, which is that is correct, but they're not criminals, in the sense that they have broken into someone's house or they've stolen something or something like that. So you know, there's a big difference here, and I think the Trump administration recognizes that and recognizes how they describe these things is important for how much support they get from the public. And there have been reports in New Orleans that the it's difficult for some media organizations to figure out who the people are who have been swept up and who have been detained. And that may be part of a strategy of not letting the media in on who is actually being detained.
Yeah, Border Patrol has not been terribly forthcoming with information, instead conducting their operations and not really saying much publicly about it. At least for the next 3 years, though, we should expect this to continue to be the policy of the United States of America as long as Donald Trump is president, right?
Oh, I think so. I mean, whatever you say about Donald Trump, I mean, he adheres to one of the major rules of politics. And then as you dance with the one that brung you, you satisfy your political constituency. And I think he's doing that with great success. I mean, if you look at the social media platforms that cover him and follow him, you get a lot of people on there who have a lot of followers who tell you, this is what I voted for. And this is something that certainly Republicans highly support. I mean, the partisan nature of this issue is stark. You see Democrats being opposed to it. You see Republicans being overjoyed by it. And so this is a winning issue, at least from the Trump perspective. In terms of the way campaigns are run in American politics, looking in the short term and the congressional elections that are coming up, as well as the presidential elections in 3 years.
So you think this will be a big issue in the midterms and a big issue again when we're picking the next president of the United States?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
Professor Hogan, we always appreciate your insight. Thank you so much for joining us here on WWL.
Nice talking with you.
Have a great day. I'm Dave Cohen. Let's check on WWL traffic. Paying four-year lows for gasoline. I bought gasoline yesterday for $2.16 a gallon, and I thought I had won the lottery. But then I got to thinking, if gasoline prices are this low, it probably means oil prices are low as well, and that's not necessarily a good thing for Louisiana's oil economy. So we asked Greg Upton to join us, the director of LSU's Center for Energy Studies. Good morning, Professor Upton.
Good morning.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing all right. Had a little frost to scrape off my windshield this morning. That was slightly inconvenient, and it's a little chilly outside. But other than that, all is well. But I guess it puts us in the holiday spirit, right? It's that time of year.
That's right. I love the chilly weather.
So I paid $2.16 a gallon for gas at Sam's yesterday, and I thought, man, I'm saving a lot of money. I was actually filling my wife's monster SUV, and it has a 30-gallon tank. So I was calculating, you know, if I was paying $3 a gallon, I saved enough to buy lunch by paying $2.16 a gallon. But then I started thinking, wait a minute, is this good for Louisiana's economy? So where do things stand right now in terms of oil prices as related to gasoline prices and with these forecasts that they're going to get even lower next year?
Yes.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because, let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit DetectTheSOS.com to learn more.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. You know, one of the perks about having four kids that you know about is actually getting a direct line to the big man up north. Mm-hmm. And this year, he wants you to know the best gift that you can give someone is the gift of Mint Mobile's unlimited wireless for $15 a month. Now, you don't even need to wrap it. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
So it's kind of a double-edged sword, low oil prices for Louisiana, and I'll tell you why. So we really have two parts of the sector here. On one hand, you have what's called the upstream oil and gas extraction and services sector. And for those, think about the folks that are doing the geological research of what is underground, drilling the wells and producing the hydrocarbons, and then transporting those hydrocarbons to market. But on the other side of it, you have the petrochemical industry. And so that, of course, includes refining, chemical manufacturing, the export of natural gas in the form of liquefied natural gas. And they are actually impacted very differently by the prices than the upstream industry. And so if you go back to, let's say, pre-2014, before the 2014 price crash that we had in Louisiana, which, of course, oil was $100 a barrel at the time, gas was, you know, around $4 a gallon, very expensive. And then we had the oil price crash, where the price went down actually to $30 a barrel in just a few months. That actually put Louisiana into a recession. We lost about 18,000 jobs in that upstream oil and gas sector. And then, of course, the price did bounce back, but we actually never gained those jobs back. And the reason is the efficiencies within the sector, where production has continued to climb within our region, but we just don't need the same amount of jobs to do that. Then again, we had the pandemic, which, of course, oil prices dropped again because there was less demand. And again, we lost about 8,000 or so jobs within that recession that was induced by the pandemic. And today, we're about half the jobs within that upstream oil and gas sector than we had pre-2014. You're correct. This last year has been a tough year for that upstream oil and gas sector. We estimate right now between 2024 and 2025, and of course, 25 is not over yet, and there will also be revisions to the data, but we estimate about an additional 1,000 jobs were lost, or about 4% of the total jobs. And again, I'm going to highlight that this is happening at the same time that we're seeing increases in production. And if you look at our neighbor Texas and nationally, the trends are very, very similar in that you need less workers to produce more oil and natural gas.
So suddenly I'm starting to feel a little guilty about enjoying low gasoline prices, because coupled with the efficiencies and the improvements in the way they do things, sounds like that if I'm paying less and less for gas, that means we have fewer and fewer high-paying oil and gas jobs in the state.
So that is true, but there's the flip side of it, which is the folks that manufacture those hydrocarbons, and they produce things like liquid fuels, which of course includes gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel, chemicals, plastics, fertilizers, all of these products that are either derived from hydrocarbons or are very, very energy intensive to produce. And over the same period that we've seen that upstream oil and gas sector shrink in Louisiana, we've seen an expansion of that petrochemical sector, over $100 billion of investment, and that has led to an increase in exports. So we export these products all over the world, and the employment in those sectors has actually steadily climbed over that time period.
Has it climbed as much as the losses in the oil patch?
So the direct employment within those sectors has not climbed as much as the direct job losses in the oil patch. But the key to that is there are a lot of those what are called indirect jobs. So think of the engineering service firms, the industrial construction firms, and there are actually more of those indirect jobs in the petrochemical space than there is in the upstream space. I don't know if it's exactly a one for one, but certainly it's impacted different parts of the sector differently, which of course means different parts of the state differently, depending upon which part of the sector that you have more exposure to.
We're talking with Greg Upton, director of LSU's Center for Energy Studies. When we come back, we'll take a look at what 2026 looks like in terms of both the economics of the jobs that are related to oil and gas on both sides of that coin that he described, and what we should expect at the pump in terms of gasoline prices after we check on WWL traffic. Talking with Greg Upton, director of LSU's Center for Energy Studies, about how we've seen a shift in where the jobs are related to oil and gas in Louisiana. What's the forecast for next year in terms of the price of oil and the price of gas and how that's going to affect the market?
Yeah, so both oil and natural gas prices are forecasted to be kind of flat over the next year or so. And so if we look at the inflation-adjusted price of oil, for example, our kind of long-term view is that that'll bounce around in the $60 to $65 a barrel range. And right now we're at $59 a barrel. And so it probably will go up a little bit, again, into that $60 to $65 a barrel range. But again, that's kind of a relatively low price that we're seeing today. We would anticipate seeing in the future. How does that translate into gasoline prices? I'm looking at futures markets here. Right now in Louisiana, we're around $2.50 a gallon, something in that range. We'll probably see them creep up into the summer months, as is normal. So typically, the price of gasoline is cyclical. So it'll likely stay, again, if futures markets are accurate, you'll likely stay below that $3 a gallon range this summer.
All right. So we should continue to enjoy these relatively lower gasoline prices as we continue into 2026. We were talking about jobs earlier. There was a lot of hype about new alternative energy jobs in Louisiana, whether it was offshore turbines, whether it was solar, or whether it was research into other means of generating energy. How has that shifted and changed over the past year, and what do you expect coming up?
Yeah, so there are really two big parts of the supply chain that we were looking at. Number one was solar energy. We had a lot of projects for solar energy that were really moving forward rapidly. And then we also had some excitement in offshore wind. Now, I think offshore wind was probably a few years out because of the timeline of those larger projects. But both the solar and the wind has really, really slowed a lot this last year. And the reason for that, on the offshore wind side, there were regulatory changes at the federal level that really halted a lot of those projects. And at the same time, we also had the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, which was passed, which prematurely sunset some of the tax credits for wind and solar that were passed and extended under the Inflation Reduction Act from the prior administration. And so one of the kind of themes of this year's outlook that we'll be officially releasing tomorrow is really that uncertainty, that policy uncertainty, and how it's driving investment. So we've definitely seen a slowdown on wind and solar. Another area that we're excited about is hydrogen production. So the legislature just finished up a hydrogen task force, which I had the opportunity to sit on. And so we are seeing hydrogen projects moving forward. And those hydrogen can, of course, be used as a fuel. It can also be used as fertilizer, which is the historic reason that we've used hydrogen. But there's this shift to perhaps using it as a fuel. And, of course, the carbon intensity of the hydrogen production is very important, and there are tax credits for that. So those are kind of the futuristic, if you will, growth areas of low carbon energy that we'll likely see moving forward.
And we know we'll get the full report out tomorrow, but in a nutshell, how healthy is the energy sector in Louisiana now, and what do you expect moving forward?
So for the upstream, we've lost about 1,000 jobs or 4% over the last year, so it's been a tough year. We are forecasting that that's going to rebound a little bit. We might gain about 500 of those jobs back, or about 2%, but not reach that, where we were a year ago, and then flat in 27 and 28. And then in the refining and chemical sector, we've actually gained about 1% of our jobs this last year. So that was about 480 jobs. And we expect that to continue to grow over the next 2 to 3 years.
Professor Greg Upton, director of LSU's Center for Energy Studies. We'll look forward to the full report coming out tomorrow. And thank you so much for giving us a preview here this morning on WWL.
Anytime. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Bye now. Well, folks, I'm going to continue to be happy that we're paying low gasoline prices and not feel too guilty about it, because it sounds like overall, while we are seeing losses in some areas, we're seeing gains in others. Things are relatively stable, and I like low gasoline prices. I'm Dave Cohen in for Tommy Tucker. We're back after the news here on WWL. 7:51, Dave Cohen in for Tommy Tucker on your Tuesday morning. As we wrap up 2025, Americans were surveyed about how did it go this year? How was your 2025? And overwhelmingly, the most common answer was, meh, it was okay. Only 10% of those surveyed across the country said they had a great year. Only 20% across the country said it was a bad year. Overall, people were somewhere in the middle, 70% thinking it was just okay. And I find that interesting because if you listen to the political rhetoric that we've been dealing with all year, I would have expected it to be more 50-50 with people who support the Trump administration and the MAGA Republicans thinking it was the best year ever, and folks who are more liberal and Democrats thinking it was the worst year ever. But apparently more than politics play a role in how people feel about their how their year went. So I'm interested to hear from you. You can call me or text me right now at 504-260-1870 and tell me, how was 2025 for you? Now, given we have 3 weeks left in the year, it's not over yet, and things could dramatically change for the better or for the worse. But to this point, how was your 2025? And it got me thinking about mine. And I've had turmoil and celebration this year. I've had some really good things happen in my family and my friend circle this year and here at work, but I've had some bad things happen as well. I just choose to focus on the good things. And I don't know that I can weigh the good versus the bad and come out with an overall answer on, you know, if it was overall better or worse. But I choose to think about the good things. You know, I got a raise. I signed a new contract here at WWL. That's good. My youngest son got married this year, and that's good. We had several babies join our family this year, and that's good. And so I focus on all of the good things. I don't ignore the challenges, and I don't ignore the bad things. I don't ignore bad things that have happened outside of my immediate circle, in the world, in the state, in the city, because there have been a lot of really bad things. And particularly being in the news business, we talk a lot about all of the bad things that happen. But I'm going to choose to be happy and focus on the good things. I want to hear from you. 504-260-1870 right now. Overall, so far, has your 2025 been a good year, a bad year, or a okay year, as 70% of Americans say? One person did just text us and say that there are significant delays northbound on the causeway for 5 to 6 miles approaching that construction now on the northbound side. So do be aware of that. We'll keep an eye on it. Overall, though, traffic has been lighter than usual the last couple of weeks. Good year, bad year, somewhere in between. Call me and text me now, 504-260-1870. We'll see what you have to say after this. So only 10% of Americans surveyed said they had a great year for 2025. 20% said they had a bad year. 70% are somewhere in the middle. James called in and said he had a great year because he retired this year. Well, congratulations, James. Somebody else texted us and said, I just got off of a Viking cruise from Barcelona to Rome. It's been a great year. Somebody else says, it's been an okay year, but it's on the upswing. And then there's this text at 504-260-1870. Congratulations, Dave. Thank you for your perspective. I'm going to focus on the good, too. My daughter got married, and I'll draw on that joy I felt on that day. I felt on that day to get me through the days we're experiencing now. Yeah, you know what? Focus on the good stuff. Remember the good stuff. Revel in the good stuff. And have a great day, week, month, or year when you can. That's the way I see it, because we can let lots get us down. And I'll say this, though. I am happy that so many Americans don't let only politics determine if it was a good year or a bad year for them. Have the Saints found their quarterback of the future? We'll find out from Saints sideline reporter Jeff Nowak after the news. It's National Christmas Card Day. Joe Cardosi said he didn't want to get any Christmas cards. All right, Grinch. But a lot of people do. One person texts us and says, I love getting Christmas cards, but if you don't send cards, you don't get them. Somebody else says, we send photo cards every year. Another says, my wife sends out hand-drawn Christmas cards. A significant number of people love them. Somebody else says, mailed my 50-plus Christmas cards the day before Thanksgiving. I love getting them, too. I've gotten 7 so far. Another says, I love to get Christmas cards, especially with pics and updates. Another says, I love to get Christmas cards, and I used to like sending them, but with the cost of stamps, it's hard to send out as many. Do you know what a first-class stamp costs right now? See if Jeff Nowak knows. WWL Saints sideline reporter. Hey, Jeff. Any idea
How you doing, Dave?
I'm good. Any idea what a first-class stamp costs these days?
No, I don't. But I've always been a fan of like the passive aggressive Christmas cards. You know, like those are my favorite. But
give us an example. Give us an example of one of your favorite passive aggressive Christmas cards.
Oh, you're putting me on the spot. No, I mean my mom used to always send out Christmas cards, and it was always like, oh, we haven't heard from them this year. It's a tradition unlike any other. But
here's a picture of our loving family. Happy holidays, but God, I wish you'd call more.
Yeah, right. Exactly. All right. Stuff like
78
that,
cents, yeah. By the way.
That's a lot. Wow.
A first-class stamp costs 78 cents. I think that makes people really consider, who do they really like before they send out Christmas cards? Who am I going to spend 78 cents?
Speaking of passive-aggressive, right?
Yes, to send this card. So there you go. Speaking of aggressive, Tyler Shuck got pretty aggressive with his running game on Sunday. Yesterday, we were talking with WWL NFL analyst Mike Dettillier, and he said the Saints no longer have to worry about drafting a quarterback. They found their quarterback of the future after Tyler Shuck's performance. Do you believe that after these, three games now with Tyler Shuck, that the Saints can comfortably say they know who their quarterback is going forward in the future?
Yeah, you know, it's tough to say that they just wouldn't consider drafting a quarterback. I think a lot's going to depend on where they end up drafting. But I do think there's, you know, you kind of look at it and you say, okay, why are you drafting a quarterback? And if it's to replace the guy you currently have because you don't feel like he can be that guy, I don't know. I feel like what we've seen over his first five starts has been enough to give you at least some level of confidence that if you get a high draft pick, you can look a different direction. I think there's a level of you're drafting a quarterback because you have to versus because you want to. And I don't think there is a quarterback in this year's draft, just for example, that the number one overall pick, whatever team has it, should feel like there's no Joe Burrow. There's no Andrew Luck, right? Like the guy, there may be a quarterback pick number one overall, but it's going to be because the team that's number one overall or the team that trades up to number one overall desperately needs it, right? You're talking about a team like maybe the Browns or the Jets or just a team that's completely just set a sail on the idea of their quarterback being in the building. But I think there's a lot for Tyler Shuck to continue to improve on. The funny thing is, I don't think that was even necessarily his best game. It was simply just the game that he did the most exciting things and led the team to a win. I thought he played better in the second half against the Dolphins than he necessarily did in the second half against the Bucks. But the difference is you found a way to win the game. And when you find ways to win the game, you've developed that belief factor that is kind of, it's hard to quantify. DeMario Davis talked about it after the game. And he was like, you know, says when he says things like this guy has the quote unquote it factor, right? Like it's just when your teammates believe in you and you can kind of build that confidence that, hey, you're going to get the ball with a chance to go do something and win this game, and you're going to get it done. And I believe you're going to get it done. Like, what are the best quarterbacks in the NFL have in common? You know, they all do it in different ways, but when you give them the ball in winning situations, they play winning football and they find ways to win the game. And having a guy like that at the most important position is worth its weight in gold. So, I mean, I think that, you know, the Saints could go out and draft a quarterback, but I don't think they feel like they have to draft a quarterback, and that's an important place to be in.
We're talking with Jeff Nowak. When we come back, we'll talk about, if not quarterback, what are the top priorities for the Saints in the draft, and we'll talk a little bit about Sunday's game that the Saints have coming up after this check on WWL Traffic. Jeff Nowak with us. Jeff, you said that the Saints have the luxury now of not having to draft a quarterback early in the upcoming draft. So where should their attention be focused? What are the biggest needs, you think, to help this team be a playoff contender next season since they're eliminated this season?
Yeah, you know, it's going to depend on where you draft, right? Like, I think the fascinating thing as you watch it right now is the Saints, if the season ended today, they would draft fifth. But, you know, all those teams are 3-10. The Falcons are 4-9. The Bengals are 4-9. So if the Saints go out and win a couple games over the final stretch of the season, get to 5 wins, which is very, it is a very clear path to do it. All they have to do is beat the Jets and the Titans for that to happen. you're in the range of potentially picking like 8, 9, 10 instead of 2, 3, 4, which is a big difference.
Which always gets people saying they should tank, they should try to lose, and no player or coach is ever going to try to lose. So we can end that conversation right here.
Yeah, I mean, in week 18, if it's like you win and you get the fifth pick versus you lose and you get the third pick, or you get the idea. Like that's the only time you might see it. Maybe you sit some players down. The Eagles did that a few years back. I think edge rusher has to be at the top of my priority list. And it's a lot of it is just because, okay, you changed defenses this year. You made it work. You kind of plugged people into roles that, they haven't traditionally done. And I think some guys have handled it better than others. But I do think just a kind of a blue chip edge rusher prospect that, you can just put out there and feel like this is a guy who's perfectly suited for this defense. I think that would be of high value for this team. And keep in mind, like Brandon Staley is that scheme is going to be here. Like he's not a guy that's going to get poached for a head coaching job, at least not in the foreseeable future. His name may start appearing if they continue to play well, but that's going to be the scheme that you roll with for a while. So you need to really kind of set it up for success. And that's the first position I look at. Safety would be a high priority for me. Not necessarily in the first round, but I want to invest in safety. Tight end is a position that the Saints have just, for whatever reason, over the last decade, decided not to invest in.
Yeah, since Jimmy Graham, really, yeah.
And even that was a third-round pick. You're not talking about first, second-round picks. But even a third-round pick, I'd be satisfied with. They did spend a third-round pick on Adam Trautman a few years back, so that was the one time they really went in on it. But I really would love to see some more investment in that position. But the benefit of having that quarterback, if you feel like you have the quarterback, you can be a little aggressive at the skill positions, because I wouldn't mind seeing them go and find a running back, maybe not in day one, but maybe, day two, maybe mid-second round, mid-third round to pair with the quarterback, because I think that room could use a little bit more depth. Obviously, Alvin's still there. Kendre Miller is still there, but there's just major question marks about what you're going to get from them. Beyond this season, Kendre Miller would be in the final year of his rookie contract, and that's definitely not a guarantee that he makes it through camp if they have a better option. So those are the positions I'd be looking at.
Saints are 2.5-point underdogs hosting the Panthers, who are fighting for their playoff life and to cement first place in the NFC South. How do you like this game Sunday?
Yeah, the Saints have played the Panthers well over the last few years, and obviously they went up to Carolina and handled them. I have kind of this warped idea of Bryce Young as a quarterback, because whenever he plays the Saints, he plays terribly. But then I see these stat lines from him playing other teams, and he's doing great. So we'll see. It would be nice for them to put some wins together in front of the home crowd to close things up.
Amen to that. Thank you, Jeff. We appreciate it. You can read much more of what Jeff thinks online at WWL.com. I'm Dave Cohen in for Tommy Tucker. It's time for WWL First News. I'm Dave Cohen. Good morning. It's 8:47. We have frost north of the lake this morning with temperatures that have dipped to freezing and feel even in the 20s with those wind chills in the area where we do have a few wind gusts. South of the lake, we're in the 40s, feeling like low 40s, and expect to ride a weather roller coaster for the next 7 days with highs getting into the 70s and then lows getting back into the 30s, and we'll just kind of go up and down and bounce around. The good news is the best weather appears to be on Friday and Saturday, when the weekend looks pretty perfect and lots of people have Christmas parties and other activities this weekend, as it's really the last full weekend before we get into Christmas week. So a lot going on. A federal judge yesterday, you heard the news break here on WWL, approved the Archdiocese's $230 million settlement with hundreds of
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Hi, DSW, birthplace of the humble brag. Here, the shoes are so good, no one would ever know how little you paid. If you didn't go telling everyone, that is. And with never-ending options for every style, mood, and occasion, all at really great prices, we'll definitely give you something to brag about. So go ahead, stock up on fresh sneakers from your favorite brands. Or try those boots you always secretly knew you could pull off. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit DetectTheSOS.com today to learn more.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day, yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes of network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply. In app only.
Dumbs. Of priest sex abuse in the New Orleans Archdiocese. This case has been going on for years now. As we have watched it unfold, the demands that financially were anticipated by the Archdiocese because of the lawsuits from those molested by priests forced the Archdiocese into a bankruptcy, and as a result, a bankruptcy judge was overseeing the settlement hearings to determine how much would be paid out to the victims. Joining us to talk about what happened and to look ahead at what's next is Stephanie Regal, writer for the Times-Picayune, NOLA.com, and the New Orleans Advocate. Morning, Stephanie.
Hey, how are you?
It's been a long time coming, hasn't it?
It sure has. Over 5.5 years. So yesterday was a momentous day for survivors of clergy sex abuse and Catholics in New Orleans.
It comes at a cost. $230 million was the agreed-upon settlement. Did all of the victims opt into this settlement, or are there still going to be individual lawsuits heard in other courtrooms going forward?
Well, I mean, even if, no, I mean, the lawsuits are gone. And late yesterday, or rather yesterday morning, it appears the last non-settling insurer, Travelers, which had some of the greatest exposure because it insured the church in the 70s, the entire decade of the 70s, more or less, when some of the worst abuse took place, they are going to probably, it looks like, cough in another $75 million, which will bring the settlement pot well over $300. So, I don't know whether most of the survivors opted in, but they almost all, like all but two or three, literally voted in favor of the plan. So that gives you a good indication that they are going to go ahead and, you know, opt into the settlement, because it's their best chance of getting money. And especially with the money from Travelers, it's a huge, it's a good deal.
How many victims are we talking about that are going to share this $300 million or so pot?
Well over 600 at this point. There were something like 660 claims filed in the case. Now, many of them came in late, way late, after the bar date that had been set by the judge in 2021. But the church has not said it is going to contest any of those. So there's an independent claims administrator who was selected by the plaintiffs committee, by the abuse committee, and a local lawyer. And he will evaluate every single claim to determine whether it's credible and then assign points to the claimant based on the nature of the abuse, the duration of the abuse, you know, the long-term pain and suffering that the individual has endured, and that will determine how much they are entitled to. So it's not like you take...
So not everyone gets roughly $2
million. By 600. Yeah. No, right? I mean, you don't divide it evenly among 600-something people.
So this is it. The bankruptcy is over, the lawsuits are over, the settlement is in, and now the Archdiocese moves forward with far less money, reorganized, and can put this, at least legally, in the rearview mirror, right?
And I think that's an important point. Legally, they can put this behind them. I think the ripple effects of this will be felt for a long, long time. There's a lot of trust to be rebuilt, trust that maybe can never be rebuilt. You know, I think many people will never quite look at the church in the same way. And also throughout this process, both to raise money to help fund the settlement and also just in response to changes in the city, changes in habits of worship, demographic changes in New Orleans, which is an aging, shrinking city, this church has, you know, shrunk its footprint. They've sold off their elderly care nursing home business. They're in the process of selling Christopher Homes, the 14 apartment complexes for low-income seniors. They've sold surplus real estate. They will continue to sell surplus real estate to the extent that they are able. There's not a huge market for old churches and old schools in, you know, questionable neighborhoods. And then, you know, they have also consolidated parishes. In 2023, about just a little over 2 years ago, Amond closed or consolidated 11 parishes, which was 10% of the total at the time. And he said then that more were on the way. And then I think because the bankruptcy was so heated, and really at a challenging moment at that point, late 23, early 24, they just didn't want the heartache and the negative publicity and the real, you know, community pain that would cause. And so they didn't do it. But I think more will come because it's just, I mean, irrespective of the bankruptcy, it's inevitable.
So it is a new and different church as a result of everything that has unfolded, leading from the child sex abuse by clergy. And this is it for Archbishop Gregory Amond, too. He said he was retiring after seeing through, because he's reached the maximum age for an archbishop. He's now set to retire now that he's seen this process through.
Sometime in 2026, he still has said he will meet with, and this is part of the settlement, he's going to meet with all of the survivors. There's a very process set up where he's going to go to each section of the diocese. I forget the term they used for it, and hold community meetings. So he has to complete some of those duties before he officially steps down at some time in 26.
Thank you, Stephanie. We appreciate your coverage of this over the years and joining us here on WWL. Have a great day.
Bye.
I'm Dave Cohen in for Tommy Tucker. We need to check on WWL traffic. Having the honor and pleasure of filling in for Tommy today and tomorrow. Normally, I'm on from 5 a.m. to 6 a.m. Please feel free to join me then or use the rewind function in the Odyssey app to go on back and listen to us early at 5 a.m. Getting a lot more of the text coming in on the Oquinar Jewelers Talk and Text line at 504-260-1870 about people upset that this settlement that the New Orleans Archdiocese is agreeing to pay victims of priest sex abuse is costing the church so much in so many ways. They've been divesting of important assets and having to go into bankruptcy and sell off portions of their charitable efforts to get the money to pay this settlement. And we've seen under the bankruptcy and under consolidation, for a number of reasons, the consolidation of parishes. So closing of actual church buildings as they have to have a bigger footprint for each one because they have fewer churches to serve as many people. Steve in Covington, thanks for calling. You're on WWL.
How are we doing today, sir?
What's on your mind, Steve?
As a survivor of child sexual abuse by a clergy.
Are you a member? Are you a member of the settlement?
Yes.
What are your thoughts on it?
Is
it enough money for you?
I have no idea what's going to come out of this because we don't get to testify in front of the person who's going to evaluate our cases. And
so
I
the third party evaluator, you're not going to meet face to face with a third party evaluator to determine how much of this roughly $300 million you're entitled to.
Correct. So, you know, to me, I want to look at the other dioceses that filed for bankruptcy and what they paid. Because if you look at Los Angeles, they paid $1.5 billion.
How many victims did they have?
Which I have no idea.
Well, wouldn't that be? That would probably be important to know if there's 600 or so victims in a much smaller, less populated archdiocese like New Orleans versus the Los Angeles diocese. You know, we have to make sure we're comparing apples and apples, right?
We do. But if you look at Boston, they paid $1 billion. And how are they going to calculate what's going to go on? Now, I have all the bills since I started medical treatment. And I've spent over $100,000 out of my pocket to cover my medical expenses over this time.
Do you think you'll get that much out of this?
I have no idea.
Let alone all of the other impacts above and beyond the actual dollar amount that you've paid to doctors and medical facilities.
You know, but I mean, look at it. I still have to go to my therapist and my psychiatrist. And better than what I get, it's not going to matter.
Will any amount of money, would any amount of money be enough for you, do you think, to really address what you've suffered through?
No, I can't answer that. Because I know that Greg Amon is going to get a full retirement package with fully covered insurance. And I think all his money should go to us.
You know, several people have texted us that they believe that the priests should be the ones paying this, but clearly no priest has $300 million, and the priests who committed these atrocities on the victims.
All right, well, back up for a second. No priest has it, but how do they have a retirement account? For the rest of their life.
Several people are also texting me, though, and saying, Steve, that it's unfair that people who need elderly care, who need affordable housing, who need other services that would have otherwise been provided by the New Orleans Archdiocese, now cannot get that charitable funding because this money has to go to survivors of child sex abuse. And most of them are angry with the priests who committed the molestations. Many are angry with the lawyers who have been involved in the process. But it really is a difficult position for. There's no good answer here. Obviously, the victims who were molested by clergy deserve compensation for that. But the question is at what price, and it is unfortunate that some have to suffer as a result of this. It would be ideal, of course, if the priests who committed these rapes, these molestations, these atrocities, could personally pay all of this money, but that's not possible. So it really is a difficult position and situation, isn't it?
Well, they took away Lawrence Hecker's retirement.
Well, the prison was supporting him. The prison system and the taxpayers were supporting him.
Right. But still, they took it away before he went to prison.
Steve, we feel your pain. We understand that there's no perfect solution to a problem of this magnitude, and there's no way to really make right all the wrongs that have been committed. I appreciate your sharing your thoughts with us and being brave enough to join us here on WWL, and I wish you the very best, and I hope it ends as best as can be for you.
I thank you for taking my call.
All right, Steve, hang in there. And we hope that the evaluator in that process works out. We're going to shift gears and get Judy Hohen here, but let's take a break before we do that here on WWL. Several people are texting us also that not just those priests, who committed these atrocious acts should have to pay, but also every priest who ever contributed in any way, shape, or form to covering it up or moving rapist priests around from one church or one parish to another should also have to pay. It's 9:37. It's Tuesday, December the 9th. I've been told that today is the 7th busiest shopping day of the year. According to the company that tracks all of those little security tags that are put on items that we buy, today is expected to be in the top 10. In fact, the number 7 biggest day to spend money on holiday gifts as people increase their spending as we get closer to Christmas. Of course, Black Friday was the single biggest day. Yesterday was the biggest day. It was called Green Monday, the largest spending day. So a lot of people are spending a lot of money buying Christmas gifts. It's also National Christmas Card Day, when people are supposed to buy now, send out those cards if they're sending them. So it is the most wonderful time of the year, right? Judy Ho joins us now to talk about the holiday spirit, how people are feeling, and to talk about the holidays in general. She's a clinical and forensic neuropsychologist and host of the Supercharged Life podcast. Happy holidays, Dr. Ho.
Hello, Dave. How are you? Happy holidays to you.
I'm doing well. It's cold here, and that's put a lot of us in the holiday spirit because it feels like, you know, it looks in the movies we see about the holidays when we don't typically get a lot of cold here, but we've got it now. And for many people, it really is the most wonderful time of the year, right? A lot of people enjoy the holiday season.
Yeah, absolutely. And I look forward to it every year. But as you just mentioned, it's also a complicated time for many people, for probably most people in a way, because I think there's so much media and expectation about this supposedly being the most merry time of year. And when you don't feel that way every day, then you feel like something might be wrong with you.
Yeah, I'm guessing that very few of us have a holiday experience like we see in a Hallmark movie where there's always a happy ending and there's magical times and things are wonderful. They're all usually challenged to overcome in those movies, but it's always, you know, happy at the end and everybody appears to be ready to live happily ever after. But I know we focus a lot on the people who struggle during this time, but it must be overall, even dealing with family issues that, you know, my mother was always fond of saying, families are a wonderful thing. Everyone should have at least one of them. Pointing out that, you know, all families are dysfunctional to some level, and we all have issues with other family members. And when you get a whole family together, there's bound to be conflicts and controversies and things like that. But overall, yeah. We do it over and over every year, and so we must find some joy in the holiday season, right? We like it in general, and most people like it. Find it a good thing, right?
Exactly. We like it because it feels like something, like a time that's special, right? There's oftentimes more vacation than on other days. It's something that a lot of people look forward to because there's that feeling of it being a special occasion. And then, of course, the bottom line is it's a time for us to get together with people that we love, even if they're challenging. And that's really because as human beings, we're social beings. We actually do want connection. That's one of the key factors for why we have survived as a species for so long, because we are a social species. We do need that for our mental and physical health. And so despite disappointments, despite any issues that you might have, you still reach for that connection. And for the people who are saying, well, I'm a recluse, I don't really need that many people. But even for those individuals, you probably need one or two people that you really feel like are in your corner. And it's a biologically and evolutionarily based need that we all have.
That all having been said, while most of us enjoy, in general, the bulk of the holiday season, we like the traditions, we like getting together, we like giving and receiving, we like the parties, we like the gatherings. There is really a lot of pressure on people to at least appear to be happy this time of year, that this is the most wonderful time of the year. So we have to feel wonderful, but not everybody does feel wonderful.
Exactly. And that pressure leads to a lot of self-criticism. Like, well, why don't I feel happy? I should be grateful. My life is pretty good. Why am I wallowing in my misery? And if depression and anxiety and any kind of emotional stress was that predictable, then only the people who have the worst life circumstances would ever be depressed. And we know that that's not necessarily the case. And even sometimes when we're trying to help somebody who might seem down or maybe even clinically depressed, we say things that maybe are supposed to help but end up feeling invalidating for them. Like when you say, well, you should be grateful. Everything's great in your life. Why are you sad? I know that sometimes we say those things to try to cheer people up, but that obviously makes them feel even more like a failure, even more shameful for struggling with the feelings that they
Right.
have.
If I should be happy, why am I not happy? And so you're telling them that even though they are feeling this way, that it's not justified, and that makes them feel even worse for feeling that way.
Exactly.
What should we say to someone if we know someone in our lives who during the holidays clearly has the blues instead of the reds and greens, who clearly is struggling and suffering? What should we say to them to help them during this time of year?
Well, I think that sometimes we overlook how important it is just to listen. Sometimes we feel most useful when we're actually saying something very specific or very directive, or here's how you're going to solve this problem, or here's how I'm going to make you feel better in the moment. But oftentimes people just want to feel like somebody's listening to them, and giving them the space just to share what they're going through is huge. And if you really feel like you must say something, one really good therapist trick that's really good in real life is what we call active listening. So you let them, you know, get something off their chest, and then instead of going straight to an advice, or maybe sometimes making it about yourself, like, hey, I went through this, blah, 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 and then you start telling your own story. It's really helpful just to reflect what you heard in your own words. So you can just say something like, okay, well, what I'm hearing is you're feeling actually super lonely at this point in time, even though you're surrounded by people every day. That's all you really have to say. You just reflect what they say. And generally what that does is, one, it prevents miscommunication, because if you misheard something, they can just correct you then. But also it encourages them to keep sharing. So oftentimes they'll say, yeah, and you know what? I've also just realized X, Y, Z. So the conversation can continue without them feeling judged, but them knowing that you're actually paying attention to them. And then maybe towards the end of that conversation, one other helpful thing that you could do is, and only if you mean it, say it only if you mean it, what can I do to help, if anything? Sometimes we think we know what might help our friends and loved ones the most, but I think it's helpful just to lay back and let them tell us, because we're all different, right? Something that's helpful to you may not be helpful to them in this moment. So just have an open-ended question. What can I do to help you? Is there anything I can do? And I think that opens a door for them to share the ways in which you can maybe alleviate their stress or their mental load a little bit. And that can really help to, one, increase connection, but two, that's truly what's going to make them feel better in that very moment.
When we're planning our gatherings, whether it's an office party, whether it's a family get-together, whether it's a friends event, I think a lot of people do feel pressure to not only attend, but to be happy mm-hmm. at these things. and sometimes yes. for some people, that's challenging. If someone's mm-hmm. not feeling happy about it, is it the advice, A, don't participate, don't go? Or is there other advice that you would give to someone when they feel like they really should be a part of this, but they don't really feel mm-hmm. like being part of it?
Right. Yeah. I mean, first, it is good to just assess and say, is this something that I really do want to do, but I'm just having fears about it, or I'm just thinking ahead and see that there could be some unpleasant interactions and you're avoiding it, or if it's just something that you should take off your list, because oftentimes we do say no too infrequently. We say yes too often, and then we end up feeling resentful and dreading things. And so it is important just to take stock first and say, is this something that I truly should say yes to? But if you know that you probably should say yes and you kind of want to, but there's just some fears holding you up, it's always helpful to give yourself some boundaries and guardrails. Just because you're signed up to go to a party doesn't mean you have to stay for the entire length of time. You can just go for an hour and then make an excuse that you have somewhere else to be and, you know, gracefully exit. There could also be certain things where if you're not looking forward to talking to certain people and when you arrive, you see that they're starting to rile you up, you can always excuse yourself from that conversation or know that that's a boundary for you to step out, right? So I think that it's important to think a little bit about, well, what can I do to protect my own mental space, even if I do go, and still get that interaction, still be there, but not burn myself out or not cause more stress. And so it's okay to do that. And I think that sometimes we just feel bad and we don't want to, you know, excuse ourselves early or say we're going to come late or just for an hour. But I think that that's very, very important for you to, one, enjoy yourself while you're there and not have resentment. And two, also be respectful to the person who's hosting, because if you're just moping around and unhappy, that's not great for the person who's hosting either, because they feel responsible for making you feel good.
Should hosts, should friends and family members do anything differently if they know there's someone who does not enjoy or cannot find ways to enjoy the holidays because of whether it's depression or anxiety or whatever the case may be? Is there any responsibility on friends and family members to do anything differently, whether it's making accommodations or gracefully making it clear that, hey, if you don't want to come, that's cool, we understand? How should folks who are hosting or who are a member of the group behave in circumstances like that?
Yeah, I mean, I think that sometimes when we see people who are around us who are suffering, we want to be the ones to pick them up, but it can't be your full responsibility, right? The individual has to take some responsibility too, and other people should share that burden. And also you should check in on how you're feeling on that given day and if you have the bandwidth to actually be more supportive. And it can change from day to day. There are some days when you're saying, hey, I have enough mental bandwidth and time to sit with you for a few hours and kind of deal with this together and listen to you and maybe help out around your house. And there's other days where you might not have the energy to check in with them at all, or maybe just a quick text and that's it. And so I think that it's important to think a little bit about how much you're able to manage or deal with on any given day. And it can change. Like, be flexible with yourself that whatever you decide today isn't what you have to decide tomorrow. And it's not you abandoning people you care about, because you can't shoulder all of that responsibility, and caregiver stress is very real.
Talking with Dr. Judy Ho, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. And I hate to, you know, a lot of people are texting us going, why are you bringing us down on the holidays? We're trying to be happy and you're making it a sad time. Well, for some people it is a sad time, but I do want to acknowledge that clearly many people really love and enjoy the holidays. They love decorating. They love entertaining. They love going to parties. They love giving gifts. A lot of people love getting gifts. And it really mm-hmm. is, for many people, a very happy time of the year.
Absolutely. And I think that that's also important to just remember to take stock of your values, the things that are the most important to you, and try your best to stay in contact with them every single day. And values are different from goals, right? It's the things that are the most important to us that we want our lives to represent. Just keep that front of mind. You can still live a valued life, even if you're having just a down moment. And that will make you enjoy the holidays much more when you're spending your time doing meaningful things, even if it's a little bit of a struggle at times.
Yeah, we were talking about today being National Christmas Card Day, and do people still send and receive Christmas cards? And one person we were talking to earlier said, you know, I miss my mom's passive-aggressive Christmas cards. When she'd send me a Christmas card and say, hey, happy holidays, wish I heard from you more. It's like, well, wait, that wasn't happy. That was kind of back. So anyway, that having been said, do you still send and receive Christmas cards, Dr. Ho?
I do. I don't do it every single year, but I think it's great. And I love getting the hard copy Christmas cards still. I don't know about you, but I love those the most.
Yeah, I still like putting them on the fridge or on the mantle. Problem is, I have so much fridge space and mantle space now, the cards never fill them up like they used to because so few people actually still send them. Some people said it's because stamps cost 78 cents a piece. Others said it's because, well, you know, I can just text you or a little message or a picture or post on social media. The world's changing, that's for sure. But for those people who enjoy Christmas cards, and I think we know the people in our lives who enjoy them, maybe still send them to those people specifically who really do appreciate and want them. So,
absolutely.
Thank you, Dr. Ho. We sure appreciate you joining us. Happy holidays to you and yours.
Thank you.
Judy Ho here on WWL. We'll see what is coming up next here on WWL and wrap up the show after this. Glad you're with us here. Dave Cohen in for Tommy Tucker.
I need a job with a steady paycheck.
I need a job that offers health care on day one for me and my kids.
I want a job where I can get certified in technical roles, like robotics or software engineering.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour with opportunities to grow their skills and their paycheck by enrolling in free skills training programs and apprenticeships. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit detecttheSOS.com today to learn more.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.